Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com. Today, as always, I have another amazing woman with me on the show who's going to share parts of her story with us. So I want to say hey to Mackenzie. Hey, how are you?
Hi, Pam. I'm doing great. Let me just formally introduce myself. My name is Mackenzie Jamet. I am a speech language pathologist and person who stutters. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I work with preschool kiddos. So, they keep me very busy and on my toes, and lots of, fun things this year, but, and I also teach Zumba on the side, just kind of as a fun stress reliever. And yeah, that's me. I'm so excited to be here today.
I'm really excited to have you here as well. Of course, this is about women who stutter, but I'm always very interested in those who stutter who go on to become SLPs. So, you know, why don't we just start right there? What drew you to that profession?
So it's interesting. So growing up, I have what is called a mild overt stutter. So I can pass off as being fluent, really, if I'm really focused and switch the words around. So when I was a kid, I wasn't severe enough to receive services in a school setting. So I received private therapy for about 6 months. And, you know, had therapy, I was, yep, I'm cured, it's fine. And it was funny because when I started college, I didn't identify as someone who stutters. I was like, oh, that's something I did when I was, you know, 10. And then when I was choosing a major, I was really interested in the brain and how, and our feelings and emotions and how that plays into who we are as human beings. And so I started looking into psychology, and when I learned that it was really only research and that I would have to get a master's degree, I was like, I don't want to do that. That's too much. I don't want to do that. So then I switched and I started looking into counseling, which was a master's degree, but I was like, well, but it's working with people though. Like I want to work with people. I don't want to sit behind a window. Sometimes it is nice to sit behind a window. Especially nowadays, but,
right.
I was starting to look into counseling, and then the thought came to me, well, I also want to learn how the brain works though. The emotion piece of it too was really important, but how I wanted to learn about why I stuttered, and because that was never really explained to me, and it was just something that, you know, happened. And I have an uncle who stutters, so it wasn't something that I was I was aware of it, but I didn't really know and understand why. And so I looked into the program at my college. I was fortunate that the college I was at, Idaho State University, had a master's program for speech language pathology.
And so was it with Dan Hudak?
So yeah, when I applied, he had just started as a professor when I applied that year. And yeah, when I applied, they were like, hey, we have someone who is a professor that stutters. And at that point, it's interesting. I was still in that mindset of like, well, yeah, but I don't actually stutter. I used to stutter, but I don't actually stutter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, going through my my graduate program was very eye-opening and hard, because I had to confront really this invisible hidden beast in my background that I hadn't really allowed to have a space until the Dr. Hudock or Dan Hudock, as I can call him now, because I'm not a student anymore. But I mean, he had some, I shouldn't say tough love, but kind of about like, actually, you do stutter. Mm-hmm. You're very good at hiding it. But is that the best way to go about that? And and I don't know, it was a really hard but important journey for me, because I had to confront some things that I really hadn't ever confronted in my life.
Yeah, but had you not had that happen, you wouldn't be as well equipped as you are now to help people who stutter, you know, whether it's preschool age kids, teenagers, or adults. I mean, you've got that experience now of hiding and then coming out. So, so I just want to backtrack for just a second. You mentioned you had like 6 months of therapy when you were a kid. Mm-hmm, was it your idea or your parents?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I think it was a combination of both. So this story sticks out in my mind because it was the reason why I wanted, I think it prompted my parents to be like, oh, there's something going on. And also for me, it was a very traumatic experience. So I remember I was in second grade. We were taking a state assessment of something. I think it was a writing test or something. Anyways, and I was done, but I needed to go to the bathroom, and I was afraid of raising my hand and saying, I'm done, can I go to the bathroom? And I mean, and I think it was also the pressure of a state assessment. We were told like, don't talk, and, you know, finger wagging in your face. But I was so nervous that I was literally in tears at my desk, because I was like, I need to go so bad that I'm done, but I'm nervous to raise my hand because I'm probably going to stutter, and then it's going to make people mad. And then, you know, I'm going to get teased, because I was teased a little bit and things like that. And so finally, when we were done, my teacher could see that I was like crying, my face was red. And she's like, are you okay? And I was like, I need to go to the bathroom. And so I ran to the bathroom. She came in and checked on me, said, Mackenzie, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And so then that kind of prompted that conversation with my parents and my teacher, and was like, hey, we saw this, Mackenzie, what was going on? And I said, well, I was so afraid. I was afraid to say anything. And so then that kind of prompted everything.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, I shouldn't say it was my choice, but in some regard, I showed that I was like, obviously I'm not handling this well. So let's try and figure out something to help.
Yeah. Yeah. Now were your parents, like, even before that happened, were they pretty supportive of, you know, whether you stuttered or not, or did you sense that they were concerned before that incident?
I think so. My like I said, my uncle stuttered, who is my mom's brother. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I felt like I could stutter around my family, and I didn't feel, you know, judged or anything like that. So my parents were very supported. I think for my parents, though, they realized that not everywhere is going to be home. Not everywhere is going to be with family. And so, I didn't feel bad about it when I was at home. But at the same time, we didn't really talk about it, though. And I mean, also, like, how do parents have that kind of conversation with a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, of like, hey, you're a little different, and you talk different, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And because again, I think, I mean, even now within my family, it's not something that we talk about a lot. Sometimes we bring it up. And in my family now, I'm the youngest, and so, I mean, there's research and everything that shows that the youngest typically doesn't talk as much, just because they have older voices that they're competing with. And so even now, my older siblings will speak over me and interrupt me. And my mom is really good about saying, I think Mackenzie was going to say something. Let's let Mackenzie say what she wants to say.
Oh, great.
Which is awesome, because I've shared with my mom, like, I like I can't get a word in when we're all together anymore. And so, so my parents have been very supportive, which is nice. I know not everyone has that. And that is very, it's hard. It's really hard when you don't have that support.
Yeah. Yeah. She sounds like a big ally. Not only your parent, but an ally. So, that's cool because, you know, when I was growing up, nobody talked about it. Nobody. I'm the oldest of six. It was, you know, evident that I stuttered. My father yelled and screamed at me, to the point where his face was all red and there was like a vein on his forehead that like throbbed. So I felt something was wrong, bad. So I made a decision at like 5 years old that I'm not going to stutter around him. And the only way I could do that was not talking. Yeah. So that was hard because when I finally, you know, said enough is enough as an adult, you know, it was hard to like reconcile my past and being covert for so long. And then just finally saying, I can't do this anymore. This is not me, you know? So what tipped you into being open about it and being involved in some stuttering things?
So yeah, I mean, kind of like I mentioned earlier, when I was in my graduate program, I mean, I was interested in stuttering and, you know, what is this unknown thing, you know? And so my research thesis was on stuttering and using counseling and speech therapy techniques. And so that was my whole thesis because I was interested in the emotional side of things, but also with stuttering. And so during that process, learning about all that stuff, I realized that I had some demons that I was ignoring. And I had one of my friends in grad school said to me one day, she's like, you're not a functional human being. You
oh God.
and I mean, I will say this, we were very close. I mean, she was my ride or die buddy in grad school. And so there was just one day she was like, Mackenzie, this is not healthy for you. You need to get some help. You're doing a lot of things that aren't healthy from a speech standpoint and from an emotional standpoint. And so
what
that
a great friend to I be know, able to I say mean, that.
After she said it, I was like, rude. But at the same time though, I mean, it hurt initially because I was like, okay, so I'm a jerk. Thanks. but at the same time though, we had the type of relationship where I trusted her opinion and I was like, okay, help me know what the problem is. Cause obviously I don't see it. And so she, you know, explained some examples. Like one, I remember again, it's interesting how traumatic things stick out in your mind.
Yes. Yes.
I remember this one day I had made, peanut butter cupcakes for my class, my graduate class. And I had spent, you know, so much time on these. And so my friend, I said, do you want one? And she said, no, I'm fine. And I just remembered that it ate me up for like 3 weeks. Cause I was like, well, she hates me. That's why she hates me and blah, 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 blah. And when I you know, said that to her, she was like, I am trying to eat better. That's why I didn't want a cupcake. It has nothing to do with you. And so that, and her saying that to me was like, oh, I got some crap I got to deal with that is really impacting me. And so during my thesis project, I worked with a lot of counselors and in the clinic that we, you know, had this trial therapy, really, I worked with a lot of counselors. I worked on counseling techniques. And in that process, because my friend was helping me, you know, counsel me as what she felt comfortable doing. And then
was she an SLP student also?
Yeah, she was. Okay. I don't remember. I mean, she's not a counselor, but she had some experience with it. And so she, you know, as a friend, she was helping me out. And then I remember during the actual clinic, it's grad school. I was busy. I was running my thesis stuff. I was working with a client as well and a counselor and, you know, providing treatment. And I was also, you know, being a graduate research assistant at the same time. So I was juggling a lot of things. And she said to me, she's like, Mackenzie, I'm trying to zip you back up as best as I can, but you need some professional help because I'm doing the best I can, but I can't help you. There's only so much I can do.
Right.
And so that prompted me to, you know, get some professional counseling and really figure out and deal with like, no, I do stutter. And it sucks sometimes. Like there are days and times when it's really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And especially in my line of work, it comes up very consistently. Mm-hmm. But also understanding that my worth as a person is not based on the fact that I stutter or that I made peanut butter cupcakes or, you know, things like that. It's, I have worth because I'm a human and that's all that matters.
Right. Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Everyone says that like grad school was hell for me. And I'm like, oh, it was definite hell. Like, I'm not going to lie with you there. It's true. So
what,
yeah,
a good friend though, who was courageous and honest enough to say, hey, Mackenzie, like, wake the heck up. Like, you've got some stuff, you know? And, yeah. You know, I mean, that's really important to take note of because mm-hmm. not everybody's comfortable with, you know, bringing up tough stuff, you know, with a friend or even family. So amazing. Are you still in touch with her?
Yes. We don't talk as much now because we've been out of school for about 5 years, but yeah, I've been up to see her and yeah, it's fun. It's amazing how, I don't know, like even, I mean, cause like I, even thinking about it now, I don't think I've talked to her for probably 6 months.
Oh, but wow.
I mean, it's been a while. I will say this though, COVID, has definitely, taken more of my time than usually what happens, but it's amazing though of, I mean, even, I mean, cause we were in grad school for 2 years, but, I mean, I count her as one of my closest friends because she helped me through a pretty hard thing and helped me realize some hard things.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Now, obviously you've got a big emphasis on counseling, which personally, I think that is so crucial for an SLP to have in their practice because, you know, solely doing fluency shaping, you know, or stuttering modification for some people like me, when I went to therapy as an adult, it just didn't work. So have that counseling background. So does that play a role with you in your therapy choices? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, definitely. I mean, and there are different bodies of thought. So I recognize that my experience might be, and my preference maybe is different than another speech therapist. But for me, I recognize that my job is not, I mean, for stuttering, for articulation therapy, for language, it's not about being 100%. Mm-hmm. It's about, we need to help our clients express themselves in whatever way they choose, how they want to, in what manner they want to. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like where I start from, is like, okay, I want you just to be able to say what you want to say, mm-hmm. whether you're 3 years old and you can't say your K sound, or mm-hmm. you're, you know, 85 and you've just had a stroke. Like, and so with treatment, I definitely keep that and bear that in mind of like, I have my opinions on what we should or shouldn't work on, but at the end of the day, it's what you want. This right. is your treatment. So what do you want to get out of this?
Right. Right. The client definitely has to be in the driver's seat.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so that's that piece of it. And then the other thing that is really important to me is, there have been times in my life when I have met SLPs and some of their like, well, no, we have to push. We have to, it's all about, you know, we have to get the data and we have to blah, 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 blah. And And I don't, there is a space for that. There is a time and a space for that. But there are some days, even with my little preschoolers, where we're working on a sound and they are so frustrated. Mm. Like, my tongue is not doing what you're telling it to do. And I'm mad. You know, they don't say it that way, but I can just see on their face, like they're about ready to blow. Mm. And so with my background in counseling and just my experience in that, and just disclaimer, I'm not a counselor. I never say I'm a counselor, but I've worked with lots of counselors. And so I've learned things that I feel ethically okay to use in my treatment. And so when I see a kid doing that and I see those signs of like, okay, you're starting to, we're getting really close to going off the cliff. Mm. So then I say, oh, I know this sound is really hard. This is a hard sound. Let's try two more times and then we'll be done. And so again, I validate that, like, this is hard. This is a hard thing. Mm-hmm. Let's try it two more times and then we're done. Mm-hmm. 'Cause then it helps them feel like I'm hearing them. Like, I hear your feelings. I got it. Like, it's there.
Right.
And that I think has really helped, because it helps them feel like they have some power too. Especially right. As a preschooler. Sometimes they don't want to be there. And right. So sometimes it's coaxing them to be like, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. So are you doing your therapy online at this point?
So at the school district I work in, we're actually a hybrid. So we do both. The majority of my students are in person.
Wow.
So yeah, it's, like I said, a lot more of my time has been taken up.
Yeah.
'Cause there's just a lot of other, procedures we have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So like I have to clean after every class and I have to, clean all the toys. The parents help me out with that, but yeah, there's a lots of other things. How we're doing it right now is I have a little like window mm-hmm. that is, so I'm on one side, they're on the other side. Then we take our masks off. We do our, you know, 8 minutes of, you know, intense. And then we put our masks back on, the window goes away, and then we do our other stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's doable. It's not fun. And I hope things go away soon, but I mean, it is what it is this year. So we're making the best with it.
Right. Right. Which is all we can do. And, you know, if you're satisfied that you're, you know, meeting your client where they're at and, mm-hmm. you know, giving yeah. them, you know, some empowerment, then you are doing it right. So kind of going back to a similar question, what helped you dive into the stuttering community? I mean, I know you're involved in a few things, and what got you there?
How do I put this nicely?
Uh-oh.
Well, sorry. Persistent people who knew that I had things to offer, but I didn't have the confidence in myself to see it for myself. Mm. So for example, I'm a part of the International Stuttering Awareness Day conference. Dan Hudak was very persuasive in saying, hey, I think you would really enjoy this. This mm. is something that you should consider. What do you think? And I was like, I don't know. I don't think I can do that. And he's like, how about you just kind of like dabble and just mm-hmm. see how it goes. And I love it. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's the highlight of my October. And I mean, it is a year round thing as being a part of being a member of the committee, because we're, you know, talking about things year round. So that's how I got started in that. And then with being a stutter social host, mm. I actually met Mitch, who's the leader, I don't know.
Coordinator.
Yeah. I don't even know what his title is really, but I met him 1 year at the clinic that I mentioned during my grad program. I met him 1 year that I was helping out, and he contacted me, I mean, about 9 months ago, and was like, hey, do you remember me? So I really think you'd be a great host. What do you think about it? And same thing, I was like, I don't know. And, you know, I tried it out and I mean, I love it. It's really amazing getting to talk with people from around the world about.
Yeah. I think Annie mentored you, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, she did.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, before becoming a host, had you ever attended a Stutter Social hangout?
I had not. Wow. I don't even know if I'd heard of it. I mean, I think Mitch had mentioned it, but I don't know. I was like, okay, yeah, that's great.
Wow. So you really dove in to a couple of things without having, you know, knowledge or background in it. Wow.
Yeah.
So you're a very brave person to take things on that you're not familiar with.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this though. I can take on big things when I see how it can impact someone else. But and this is something I'm working on, so I'm going to put that caveat out there, but I very rarely do things for myself personally. So like, I'm not very brave when it comes to meeting new people or, you know, saying at work, I need a day off. Like, I'm so exhausted. And so I think being a part of, you know, of ISED and being a host have been good for me because I get to rub shoulders with other people that I see what they're doing in their own lives. And I'm like, I wish I could be like that. I wish I was brave enough to go up and order a hamburger with pickles because I love pickles, but I very rarely order anything with pickles, that silly fun word, but because I'm afraid of, you know, that one word that I'm going to stutter on. I really do think, and I mean, everyone experiences stuttering differently, but for me, I can get away with being fluent. Like really, people don't really know. And then I say it and they're like, oh, I never would have guessed that. And I'm like, well, that's great. So now I feel like I'm a fraud and a fake for the one word that I stutter on. So wow. I don't know. Yeah.
So like when you said that you were afraid to say pickle, P is a good word, letter for me, and it starts my name. What were you afraid of though? I mean, if you stuttered on pickle, were you afraid, you know, the cashier or the waitress would laugh or other people would hear, or what kind of fear was that?
I mean, in the times that I've thought about it, I've had a few negative experiences where people have, are you okay? What's wrong with you? And, you know, and so it's that, I mean, I think it's twofold because I'm nervous of getting negative reactions, but then I'm also, I'm a perfectionist and I hold myself to high expectations, which I mean, it is good in some aspects, right? I'm, you know, driven. I have accomplished all these things, but at the same time, sometimes I hold myself at a too high of level that I'm like, well, no, I'm a speech therapist. I can't stutter. If I stutter, then obviously I'm not being a good speech therapist. I think that's a piece of it. And then also it's uncomfortable when someone is like, are you okay? And I want to be like, yeah, I'm fine. Go away. Leave me alone. I just want my pickles.
Right. So have you had any parents of preschoolers that have heard you stutter and then, you know, feel apprehensive?
I can't remember, which I feel like if I don't remember, it didn't happen because I probably would have remembered. I've stuttered I shouldn't say quite a bit, but especially when I'm doing IEP meetings. So I'm creating an individualized education plan for a student. There are certain words that I can't get around. I have to say Medicaid. I mean, there's not another word for that.
Right.
I have to say Medicaid. And there have been times when I've stuttered well as one of my past one of my friends would say, you stutter so well when you say Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And really it's, I mean, for me, it feels like it's an eternity. It's probably like, what, 3 seconds, 5 seconds, maybe.
Right, right.
And they didn't say anything. Okay, yeah, sounds great. And then, you know, we keep going on with IEP. If anything, I've only had, I shouldn't say only, but I mean, really, of the experiences that I've had with that, I usually talk about it more when I have clients that do stutter. Mm-hmm. I say, hi, yeah, I stutter too. Mm-hmm. And it helps bridge that conversation with the parents, because I mean, sometimes their fear is, my child stutters, they're never gonna, you know, achieve anything, quote unquote, you know. Mm-hmm. And them seem like I'm a successful person. I have, you know, I have a great job, I have a good life. Mm-hmm. Your child can accomplish things. Whatever they want, they can accomplish.
Right.
They just have to have, you know, the support and drive like any other person would.
Right. Right.
And so I think that's what's interesting to me, is I've never had a negative experience with a parent, but I still am nervous about it. Mm. And I hate it when it happens. And so, I mean, for me, it's like, well, is it just because I'm making up scenarios that, well, this could happen, so therefore I have to be nervous about it, you know?
Right. Totally get that. You know, and I'm familiar with IEPs because I worked in a school for about 12 years, was not part of the IEPs, but I know what a lengthy, demanding process it is. So you know, being part of the educational team as a speech therapist, you know, has its, you know, ups and downs, I'm sure, because you're not practicing or stating the same goals as the teachers are. So it sounds like you have a very well-rounded experience and well-rounded contributions to offer to other people. So how did you feel when I asked you to be a guest today?
I had mixed emotions. I was shocked. I was like, oh, you think I have something to offer? Okay.
Oh, you do.
So I mean, I was kind of shocked and a little flattered of like, oh, someone thinks that I actually am like a worthwhile human being and have something to offer other people. That's great. I must be doing something right. And also I'm very open about stuttering with people that I know. With strangers, it is a little different because you never know maybe how they're going to react, but that is something that I like about myself, is that I'm very open with the people that I know, and like, mm-hmm. yeah, I stutter, like it's a thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if it, you know, weirds you out or makes you feel uncomfortable. And I've had some good conversations with my friends of like, you know, we hadn't had that open dialogue of, well, when I stutter, I feel subconscious. And they're like, well, why? I mean, I've never laughed at you. I've never said anything. Why do you feel that way?
Right.
And I said, well, because I'm nervous about what you think. And they're like, honestly, it doesn't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. I love mm-hmm. that you feel comfortable around me and that you can stutter in front of me and that you say whatever you want to say, regardless right. of what sounds are in the word.
Right.
And so, so when you asked me to be a guest, I was like, okay, well, am I going to have to bare my soul? Like, am I going to have to like, you know, talk about my childhood, everything, you know, anyways. And so, so I was shocked, flattered, and a little nervous because I was like, I feel like I'm pretty comfortable about sharing my feelings and stuff and, you know, my story, but mm-hmm. that's all, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. Telling lots of people that I've never met of like, here's my life.
Yeah. But what you're doing is, you know, people that will listen, particularly women who often feel, you know, we are the minority within a minority. So women often feel a lot more isolated than guys do. So sure. when other women listen to this podcast, they're going to hear your story of how, you know, you work so hard to cover things up and now you're not, and it's better, you know? So mm-hmm. that is inspiring, you know, people who are still stuck or in hiding can just learn so much from just talking about stuttering, you know, because there's not that very many venues that are exclusive to women who stutter. Yeah. So yeah, you've offered a really inspirational, you know, telling. I'm sure there's tons more stuff in your story, but you know, time always just flies by here. But yeah, so I was just curious because, you know, we had never met in person. We had only, you know, exchanged emails and names and stuff. So I was like, you know what? She's really cool. And, you know, I'd like to have her as a guest. But particularly, I asked you when I saw that you did the video for the 2021 ISAD conference. And I'm like, oh, you go, girl. What was it like making that? How many times did you record?
I think 8.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I actually put it off quite a few weekends. Like I was like, okay, I'm going to do it the first weekend in February. And then I was like, well, but I'm not sure what I should say in it. And I'm not sure what I should, like, should I mention this? And, but should I say this? And finally I, our committee chair, again, I don't really know what his, if he has official title, but Scott, yeah. I remember he said in an email, he was like, cause I had asked like, okay, is there specific things I need to include? And he was like, he said something to the effect of, you speak it from your heart. Like, mm-hmm. this is an opportunity for people to have an introduction to the conference.
Right.
And you speak from your soul. Like, that's what we want to hear. And so when I heard that, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it the way that I mm-hmm. think it should be done, regardless of what people have done in the past. And I mean, there were a few things like, okay, I need to mention the days, like the mm-hmm. dates, and I need to mention the theme, obviously, that's the main purpose of the video. But mm-hmm. But yeah, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it the way that I want it done. And if people don't like it, then I guess I'll redo it. But it was actually really just hearing those words from Scott. I was like, no, I can do it the way that I want to do it. And mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I don't have to follow what someone else has said or what someone else has done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I don't know, it made me feel a lot better about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, particularly this year's theme, you know, be the change you want to be, that kind of like sums up you know, like you made yeah. some changes so that you could become, you know, present day Mackenzie instead of, you know, holding on to past Mackenzie.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, it does. And so I think part of the, I'm not sure this was the reason why I was picked for the video, but the theme idea was mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember I was like, oh, they picked it. I'm so excited. And yeah, I just remember thinking of, I mean, again, I think we can all think of a time when something has happened in our space that we're like, I don't like that. I wish that was different.
Right.
But unfortunately, nothing's going to change if we don't try and do something about it.
Exactly.
And so I think just that's why I'm really excited for this conference and just to see what other people's thoughts and ideas are, because I know what I would change in my space, but maybe there's something that I haven't experienced that someone else experiences. And that's, oh yeah, I want to change that too. Yeah. Let's team up. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good. It was scary, but good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It was a very good it was very conversational. You know, it wasn't like somebody's reading from a script and you can tell that. I mean, it was very natural, conversational. You looked like you were okay with what you were saying. And mm-hmm. I like that. And I'm sure a lot of other people are going to also. So kind of winding down, if you could just give one message to a woman, maybe a teenage girl, you know, coming up with their stuttering journey, what insight might you offer?
Oh, that's big.
Well, what helped you the most?
Yeah, I'm trying to collect my thoughts. I think I think the main thing is the only person that can make you feel bad about yourself is you. Mm. We're going to experience negative things. I mean, for someone who stutters, someone who doesn't, we're always going to experience people that don't like us, think, you know, X, Y, Z about us, you know, think we're mean or whatever. But in the end, the only person that can make us feel bad about ourselves is us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those things that we hear can help us change. You know, sometimes it's something we need to hear of like, hey, maybe you need to check your attitude when you're doing this. Mm. And sometimes it's like, sorry, you don't like the way my hair looks. That's your problem, not mine. Mm. And I really think that trying to figure out how you can have, I shouldn't say a filter, but you know, a way that you can understand, okay, this is something I need to learn from. And this is something that I'm going to just ignore.
Right.
It's something that someone said to me and yep, boom. And it's gone. I'm not going to let it attach to me. And that's something that I wish I had understood when I was a teenager, because me attaching to a lot of negative, you know, and reactions and things that I experienced,
right,
it dug me into a deep, deep hole. And I'm coming out of it, but I wouldn't have gotten in the hole in the first place if I would have had that understanding of, yeah, people are going to think that, they're going to think all these things about me, but what really matters is what I think about me. And right. I mean, that's hard. It's a lifelong journey to try and weed through all those things. Cause there are some things it's good for us to have feedback and be like, ooh, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, like we talked about, my friend that was like, you're not being, what are you doing?
Right.
You need some help. And right. If I would have ignored that, my life would look very different mm-hmm. versus I took what I needed to be able to make some changes, but also not saying like, well, I must be a terrible person then.
Right. Right.
And that it's hard. It's a hard thing to figure out.
Right. Right. Well, I think that's a really good message for, you know, young women, you know, in their teens or early 20s to hear that just be open, and it's not going to be an overnight process. It's going to be a journey, and you know, journeys can take years and years, and that's okay. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mackenzie, definitely. Thank you so much for being on the show today and for sharing, you know, parts of your journey. You're really going to inspire a lot of people.
Thank you, Pam. It's been fun.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories. No, no, no. No, no.